And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of the Hagman & Hagman Report. Our very special guest, Debbie Bacigalupi. She's co-produced and inspired timely documentaries, a number of them, of course, and all focusing on how aggressive environmental policy is harming rural America farmers and, you know, discouraged by the erosion of rural America. Debbie ran for Congress, the U.S. House of Representatives, back in 2012. She's responsible. I mean, you talk about putting her actions where her words are, and she's also responsible for hosting many town halls and conferences on the number of issues. She's the senior editor of technocracy.news. That's a website. It's most informative. And she's an expert on the globalist agenda known as Agenda 2030. Agenda 21 in the alternative, of course, in the previous. And we're talking about how this globalist agenda is affecting and will affect each and every one of us. Debbie, let me ask you, what is on, out of the entire landscape of all the things that are out there with respect to globalism, what are you looking at right now? What is most concerning to you? Now, we went over a bunch of stuff earlier, but let's maybe take a step back, and if you have to go over a few things again, let's do it. But what should we be focused upon, especially now that Obama is, what, 17 days away from vacating his premises?
That reminds me of when he said, we are just 5 days away from fundamentally transforming the United States of America. That still is my concern. Is the fundamental transformation of the United States of America. And all of these, when I started researching, and thanks for asking, I have never been asked that question. It is a fabulous question. When I started researching United Nations Agenda 21, because I knew that there was something wrong, seeing that you know, the Fish and Game, which were once friends with my parents, and, you know, they'd come to our ranch and have pleasant conversations with them, all of a sudden started wearing these vests, these bulletproof vests, and came flanked with guns. And when they talked to my parents, they were flanking my parents on either side, meaning, you know, there were my parents in the middle, and they'd have, you know, Fish and Game Warden in front of them and a Fish and Game Warden behind them. Now, this just didn't happen to them. This was happening all over. In the valley across from us, in the valley across from us on the other side of Highway 5 in California, there was a rancher, a generational rancher, who was charged up to $26,000 per fish, which there were 9 fish that were found dead, tiny, fingerlings, about the size of your pinky. Found dead in a diversion with what's called a fish weir, which is to help keep fish out of, you know, diversions, which, by the way, we need diversions, people. We need dams. We need water canals. We need to divert water from one area to another. You know, California history is based on our ability to divert water and grow crops in an area that was desert, but rich with nutritional value, rich that you could grow orange trees and lemons and almonds and walnuts and all these things that made California, you know, once the fifth largest economy in the world. Why? Because we were able to divert food. You know, gold brought people here. We were able to divert water for food. And then what came of that were industries after industries, including biotech industries in Hollywood. Water put California on the map when it came to gold and then agriculture. So, you know, we need to divert water. So what was happening on these people's ranch or these people's diversion where they were being charged, you know, up to $26,000 per fish, someone videotaped these 5 fingerlings. By the way, this is an area where there's lots of birds. So to suspect that those birds wouldn't find 5 dead fingerlings, fish, in this water canal made to divert and allow people to irrigate their crops, whether it's hay or food for people, hay for livestock or food for people, how did someone just happen to know that there were 5 dead fish that they would videotape, post it onto YouTube or whatever they ended up posting it to, where NOAA, National Oceanic Atmospheric Association, and NIMS, National Marine Fisheries Sciences, came to that generational family's ranch, knocked on the door, read them their Miranda rights, saying, we are treating this as we would a murder. So what did this ranching family have to do? They had to settle out of court because our court systems have shifted. So your question was, what do I see? What am I concerned about? I'm concerned, Doug, about this agenda moving forward. The Bundy case, the Finicum case, moving forward without Americans getting involved, where there is people, where there are people getting hurt. So this generational ranching family in Siskiyou County settled out of court because the court was it wasn't a court of our own peers anymore. It was a court of the federal government's peers. So there was no way that this family was going to say, we did not murder those fish. It wasn't our fault that you, Fish and Game, built this weir that obviously was faulty, that those fish got caught when the water, you know, dried up, and those fish got caught in a small pool from your weir that you built. And now it's our fault, and we're being charged for murder, and up to 25,000, I think it was 25,000 per fish times 9 fish found. It was 5 or 9, don't quote me on it, but it was somewhere in there. You get the picture. Well, then there's another rancher, Andy Johnson out of Wyoming. So Andy Johnson out of Wyoming is like me. He would describe himself as a nobody. And he lives in an area of Wyoming with maybe 300 in population. He and his young wife, he must be in 30, she's in her 20s, and they have 4 young daughters. One who has cleft lip who needed, you know, surgery. And, you know, for this very extreme cleft lip. Mm-hmm. And so here they built, you know, they just want to, you know, mind their own business, and they built a stock pond that was permitted by the state of Wyoming. So they got all the paperwork that they needed. Well, then who comes along? The federal government, the EPA, charging them with water quality based on the Clean Water Act and WOTUS, Waters of the United States of America, saying that their stock pond was violating the Clean Water Act. By the way, permitted again by the state of Wyoming. The water coming in, they had to do all these studies. And what they were being charged was, it was something like $23,500 a day. So the EPA sent them a letter saying, we are charging you $23,500 a day. It might be a different number, but it's up there. Or it was $16,500 and no, got up to $16 million. Got away, so the fine, the EPA charged you $23,500 a day, I think was the number. It might have been $26,500 a day, but in the 20s, until you return this stock pond to the way you found it. It, first of all, it's private property. Secondly, he got permission from the state of Wyoming, in which his private property exists, to build this stock pond. What's a stock pond? It's a pond where you feed your livestock, so that he could be independent, so that he, his family could be independent, that they could grow and have their own food and not rely on the federal government. So by the time that the fee built up, it was like over $16 million. Pacific Legal Foundation represented them with no charge to their winning. But the fact that these people, this was in 2014, the fact that these quote-unquote nobodies, because they would describe themselves just as I would describe myself, I'm a nobody. I just care about freedom and liberty enough that I put my life on hold and, you know, to do this full-time without pay. And so this family, their message is, if they can do it to us, they can do it to you. We also hear about people in Oregon wanting to collect their water. But the government comes after people collecting their water. Or what about the Lunny family out of Drake's Bay Oyster? You know, the most sustainable oyster farming in, arguably, in California, where 30% of the oysters, commercial oysters, came from this Drake's Bay Oyster farm, which was in a national park. It was, they leased the land to this family for, or to to this industry, to Drake's Bay Oyster, for over 100 years. But then you have this radical government coming in that has this radical agenda called the 2030 Agenda or Agenda 21, which, by the way, by the year 2020, their goal, the 2030 goal, is that all ecosystems, I can quote it, let me pull it up from my presentation.
Sure.
But that all ecosystems target 6.6 of the 2030 agenda. Why is the 2030 agenda matter? Well, in the segment before, we talked about how Walmart is pushing the 2030 agenda. Just look up Walmart Business 2030. You'll also see other companies that you and I most likely frequent a lot. Gas stations to Johnson & Johnson and Walt Disney and Disneyland, yes. But target 6.6 of this United Nations agenda is by the year 2020. So that's less than 4 years from now. That's less than 3 years from now. Protect and restore water-related ecosystems, including mountains, forests, wetlands, rivers, aquifers, and lakes. Guys, that is everything. Our food relies on water. So they are to protect and restore water-related ecosystems. Let's restore. Well, look at the dams built across the United States or even California. The reason we have food in California is because we dammed and we diverted water. And so when you dam and you divert water, that then messes up their ecosystem that they want to protect and restore. This is why in California, we will not see the building of dams, but like where my parents are, the tearing down, the breaching of the largest dam removal project in worldwide history that most likely no one has ever, very few people, a handful of people on this call, have heard of. It's called the Klamath River Dams. And there is a set of four hydroelectric, clean, green, renewable energy dams. And behind each dam, behind each hydro dam, is a lake, is a storage lake, storage facility. Provides 365, 7 days, 24 hours a day water. It prevents flood, it prevents floods. It prevents, it helps, in drought conditions. It helps in fire conditions. It helps ecosystems because you have reliable water 24/7. Put in your web browser a Google alert for dam removal and watch every single day. For the next month, 2 months, years, which I've had this Google alert on my, going on for years now, where I've built up, you know, something like 30,000, emails with Google alerts for dam removal and ranching. And you will see all across America dams being considered for removal. And it was Bruce Babbitt, former Department of Interior, which I also have great concerns. So you asked, you know, what am I looking at? I'm looking at Trump's appointments, like Ryan Zinke from Montana as the Department of Interior. To me, that is the most important position because the Department of Interior controls, manages all our land, whether it's private or public. How could it be private? Well, if you consider that they consider all water systems related, if it drops from the sky, lands on your roof, drops into the ground somewhere, it hits the rest of the water system. So this goes to that we are all one. We are all one ecosystem. Everything is connected. So this is why you hear about connections going on, even cities being connected, and cities and towns and mega regions being connected across the United States, because they want to move us into a system where all cities are connected. This is, you know, something that I may get off track here, but something that Patrick Wood has been trying to get out to the world is a book that's coming out by a guy named something like that. I should look it up, but you can look up technocracy.news and find the name. Anyway, he has done TED Talks on how cities will be connected in the future. He has a book coming out called Technocracy in America. Now, if that shouldn't frighten people who already know about technocracy, Now you have this futurist. He calls himself a futurist. He and his wife are about smart cities. What's smart cities? It's United Nations Agenda 21 and the 2030 Agenda and the New Urban Agenda. So all those things are interrelated, interconnected in the same agenda, ultimate agenda in the end, where all people live in cities. This is why we hear in the future, the majority of the population will live in cities. You are hearing that on the news all the time right now. One, the Earth world is overpopulated. Two, we need to live a more sustainable lifestyle, and we need to save our ecosystems, and we need to save biodiversity. And three or four or whatever it is that, sorry, I didn't go through Common Core math, so my math might be points. But anyway, that we will all live in high density living situations, the built world. So be watching for this Technocracy in America book coming out, and be watching for who Trump puts into office. What is happening still, even though Trump is in office and claims that, you know, he's for the individual and restoring, making America great again, I don't think Trump understands fully what made America great in the first place. My concern is that Trump believes that public lands are good. My concern is that by putting somebody in the Department of Interior as the secretary, a guy named Ryan Zinke, who is a very short, he has a very short political career at this point, and he believes in public lands as well. As a landowner or a daughter of a landowner, I think that public lands not only destroys private property, it gives the power over to the government more and more as they encroach on private property. It starts to erode us locally, meaning once you executive order through the Antiquities Act a large, vast segment of land, you then start to take away the tax from private property. You take away that tax, which was going into your local economy. Now, since the federal government has its, you know, has its dirty hands in it, and it's now claiming it as its own, that now tax, you know, is taken out of your local economy. It's not used for your local economy, and it's now the federal government's land until we start standing up like the Bundys have. Mm. And I'm not suggesting, Doug, that we need to do what the, you know, how, what the Bundys did. But I do know that, you know, for example, the America's Great Outdoors Initiative still goes through under Trump.
Right.
And what are we doing about it? That was Obama's 2011 initiative, which was to link all national parks together. Where are we stopping that? Mm. And is Trump, do you think that Trump is educated on all these things?
I don't think any one person can be, and I think, and this, to me, just looking at this from an outsider, not having anywhere near the experience that you do, when I look at this, and frankly, I go to technocracy.news, and you look at the articles, look at the reports, you read Patrick Wood's book, Technocracy Rising. It's difficult to understand or comprehend the scope of what's taking place, how deep this is, and how this has just been forced into all aspects of our lives. I mean, and I don't want to change or divert from the subject, but, on the front page of technocracy.news, there's an article, World Economic Forum, social media feeds are the biggest threat to democracy. To me, without looking at the article itself, to me, that's more of a statement about the knowledge, I guess, than, you know, a public awareness about what's taking place. The more people know, the bigger the threat they are. But having said that, and I could be wrong because I did not read that particular article, but it's staggering, Debbie, this, just what you're saying, it's staggering. And then I do have a feeling, for example, the story about the fish, the story about the, all of the accounts that you had gone over, these are not isolated cases, are they? They're not, are they?
No, and you know, I don't even know. There are probably thousands more stories like that that, you know, people are scared to say anything. You know, ranchers and farmers, they're, in my opinion, a unique set of people. I just, you know, adore their spirit.
Sure.
They're not in ranching and farming to make money, because it is not a lot of money. I can tell you firsthand that my parents struggle, but they love the lifestyle. They love the independence. They love seeing animals. In fact, where my parents' ranch is, and hi to Heidi Martin, who's listening in, and she's on the other side of us, so we share a fence line. I can tell you these hard-working farmers and ranchers are up at the crack of dawn, and they go into the house, you know, late at night when it's dark and you can't even see outside anymore. Not only stewarding the land, but stewarding the animals, taking care of the land. You know, they may not be able to pass it on to, you know, their family based on, you know, a government that is taking and doing what Obama is doing and what Clinton did. And even under Bush's watch, you know, there was a lot of land taken. There were a lot of monuments created. And the problem with monuments and monumentalizing is it's perpetuity. It's in perpetuity, meaning once it's monumentalized, it's taken out of the private hand forever. And I don't know, people are saying, I'm reading that, you know, Trump can undo these executive orders on monuments. Mm-hmm. Do we have a president who has reversed a monument?
I don't think so. And you make a good point, because Obama he grabbed two more national monuments, national monuments. 1.65 million more acres of western land for management by the federal government. In what universe, on what planet is this good in any stretch of the imagination?
It's not good. But you know what? Just like, you know, on our technocracy.news page, World Economic Forum, this is not our article. This is an article that we've posted. And Patrick has made a comment. The technocrat-minded global elite at the World Economic Forum are concerned over social media because it has produced results that differ from their predetermined outcomes. So that's Patrick's, you know, comment on this article. But look at the title. World Economic Forum, social media feeds are biggest threat to democracy.
Right.
At first, unless you understand what true democracy is, you would believe that article. You could believe that article to believe that, you know, democracies are good because of the title, Biggest Threat to Democracy. Guys, democracy is simply mob rule. We do not have mob rule in America. That is why our founding fathers were very specific about not putting that word, democracy, in the Bill of Rights, I think it was, and the Constitution. It might have been the... was it the Bill of Rights or the
Declaration of
Independence and the Constitution? They did not, because they feared a democracy. They feared mob rule. But if you go to Fox News, you're going to hear, I guarantee, if you turn Fox News on for, you know, an hour, you're going to hear the word democracy.
Oh, yeah.
This gets back to you, Doug. Where are we patroning? Who are we patroning? Why would we go to Walmart for clothes when I could go to Heidi Martin's shop, you know, in Main Street and have Heidi sew me the thing that I want? And I know Heidi's a small farmer and rancher. I'm going to support her.
Exactly.
Versus supporting this social media that feeds, or not social media, but media that feeds the lies. This is a lie. We are not a democracy. It's a lie. So are we going to support lies? Are we going to support lies? Are we going to fight against lies? Because the truth matters more than anything else.
See, and you're exactly right. And people, and we're about 2 minutes away from the break here, Debbie. But I'm so glad you brought this up, because our language has been hijacked. We are not a democracy. That's absolutely correct. And yet people will tune in, listen, and hear the word democracy repeated over and over and over again, as it would apply to the United States of America, which is a constitutional or representative republic. And yet, despite that, it's repeated over and over again. And our, and that's why I mean, that's one of the things I really, I have a real big thing for is use of proper language. And especially for another example, I know this is getting way into the weeds here, but, substituting the word gay for homosexual, or using the word gay, the phrase gay marriage when it's an oxymoron. So all of this, we are being, assaulted on our language. And Michael Savage says border language and culture. Of course, language meaning something a little bit differently there. But nonetheless, it's still an aspect, an issue that we have to really pay attention to. Folks, our guest is, oh my goodness. I told her during the break that she looked like, and you can't see her right now, but you will see her on the replay on the YouTube, but, Bridget Moynihan. I guess it's Moynihan from Blue Bloods, the actress. That's what she looks like. Just a pleasant and articulate young lady. Debbie Bacigalupi. Senior editor of Technocracy News, if I can talk correctly. I'll be working on my numbers tomorrow instead of the alphabet. Folks, stay right where you're at. You're listening to the Hagman and Hagman Report on this very special occasion. Actually, first broadcast out this year, and what a firecracker this is, indeed. In fact, literally, according to Tech Eric over there, in front of a smoking computer. Stay where we're at, folks, for our final segment with Debbie. We're going to be right back. This is the Hagman and Hagman Report with our guest, Debbie Bacigalupi. Technocracy.news. That's technocracy.news, a website you're going to want to take a look at. And, to support her research efforts. And I'm a big proponent of this, folks. If you, you know, this research does not come free. It comes at a price, sometimes a very severe, steep price. Get a hold of Debbie, as well. She's got a good independent business with Rodan and Fields as a partner distributor in that. So it's really a win-win situation. The product is good. Again, just ask Val down the road there, she'll tell you. But the fact is, we all need at this point. Here it is, 2017, the first business day of 2017. We're 13 years away from the year 2030. I get it. The Agenda 20, Agenda 21, or Agenda 2030, and at this point, of course, speaks to a globalist agenda. And one thing that blew my mind, when you go on technocracy.news. Take a look at the map. Take a look at Obama's historic land grab, 553 million acres for conservation. But take a look at the federally controlled lands, the color-coded map. Debbie, what's up with that? I mean, it's incredible here.
It is. It's horrendous. And as we hear about more and more land grabs, that, you know, that Wildlands Project becomes more and more red. What's red? More federally government owned. You know, the federal government was only supposed to own 10 by 10 square miles, which is Washington, D.C.
Right.
Forts and ports. Why? To protect us. For international commerce and to protect us. They had very limited and defined role. So when did we give them the power of controlling all land in the United States of America? When did that happen? And what are we going to do about it? Because the more and more we let them get away with this, let them get away with what? With overarching, they're overreaching what we the people gave them the power of. You know, we the people gave them the power. They do not exist without us.
That's right.
We come first. And that's why we, the people, you know, is such a powerful, you know, prelude to our founding documents. Because it was supposed to be about the people, was supposed to be about individualism and your natural rights. So when you have your natural rights, government can't take them away. Why? Because government does not give you your natural rights. The supreme law of the land, which our representatives are supposed to support and uphold, is to protect those natural rights. So if government can give them your rights, if government can give you your rights, what can government do?
Well, they could take them away. I mean, obviously.
Okay. They could take them away. And we see this happening with cases like LaVoy Finicum, whose wife, by the way, Jeanette Finicum, bless her heart. What an amazing, amazing woman. The BLM is not letting her graze her cattle, even though she and her husband have upheld their agreement with the BLM, the Bureau of Land Management. The federal government has not upheld what their part of the bargain was, which was to let them graze on land. So we're seeing, you know, what we're seeing when it comes to farming and ranching and our ability to produce and produce on our own property. We're seeing it slip away. You know, when I ran for Congress in 2012, my slogan was, we need government on our side, not on our back. And if you ask any farmer or rancher who is intimately involved with these issues that are going on, whether it's the Clean Water Act, the Clean Air Act, the Endangered Species Act, and there's a whole list of others, they would tell you that government was once their friend is no longer their friend. Right. You know, we want to work with the government. We believe in government, just as LaVoy Finicum had said. We believe in government. We need government. We need government to protect our rights. We don't need a government that is egregious, tyrannical, and taking away our ability to live and live a life where we are independent, not dependent on government, but independent. If you want to choose to be dependent on, you know, on government, that is your choice. But once you start making everybody dependent on government, you give government more and more power. And that was not what, how the United States was supposed to be. So.
Wow. Yes. You, no, you're correct. I didn't mean to interrupt or take you off stride, but I've got a lot of people wanting me to ask you, what, Mrs. Finicum's, or what the case with respect to the, Finicum, being murdered essentially by the federal government, and I saw the video, and of course I, frankly, it just sickens me, but, where does that case stand?
She is hoping for a, wrongful death suit. I just posted not too long ago on my YouTube channel, which is DBACIGALUPI, DBACIGALUPI on YouTube, a video that I took with my cell phone. In the first segment, we talked about how I had Lord Christopher Monckton and Jeanette Finicum staying at my house, which is like just a hoot to me, you know, heroes of mine staying in my home. And so I posted a video of her speaking and in this interview, and it's just astounding. She is such a beautiful, generous, loving, caring woman, which she would tell you, you know, I just want to be a mom again. I just want to be a wife again. Well, that was taken away from her. When they murdered her husband, why did they murder him? For sticking up for his rights. But he wasn't just sticking up for his own, he was sticking up for ours as well. He was driving to, you know, we have the freedom of mobility. He was driving to a meeting in John Day County to meet a large group of people in a room where another sheriff who believes in the Constitution, Glenn Palmer, who stayed at my parents' ranch before, neat guy. And by the way, this is his, he's out of John Day, Oregon. This is the last time that I think this is the last time he's going to run. And I know a couple other constitutional sheriffs, you know, this will be their last, you know, term, which is, scary since the sheriffs are the, have the most power in the county.
Right.
And so, and are, you know, have this position that's supposed to protect the citizens and finding it more and more difficult to protect the citizens. So we need to work on another action item would be we need to have sheriffs run or people run for sheriff who are people who truly believe in the U.S. Constitution as the supreme law of the land that protects your individual rights. Not a sheriff that believes in United Nations Agenda 21, sustainable development and, you know, ecology of the land. And, you know, there's a balance of people and nature. We are a part of nature. Sorry, guys, we are. So there's got to be a balance. The balance has shifted away from the people, as I told you in the case with the ranchers in Siskiyou County, where NEMPS and NOAA, you know, said that we treat the death of fish like we do a murder of a human being. That is crazy talk. That you place the value of five fish over the, you know, you equate that with a human life.
Yeah,
when they're this,
the word murder should have never ever entered into that conversation, but
it did. So with Jeanette's case, she's hoping for a wrongful death case, and it's interesting that we're not hearing much about it, but we need to keep her story going. There's an event called The Day That Never Happened on January 26th in John Day County. This is in Oregon.
All right.
And it was the day that a year after LaVoy Finicum was murdered by the government, and it's going to be a gathering of people to have the meeting that never happened. What's the meeting about? Learning about our constitutional rights. Why? Because if we do not understand our rights, if we do not understand what five rights, what five liberties you have in the First Amendment, for example, you cannot name all five right now. Which ones are you losing? Right? So if you're not using them, you're losing them.
Right.
And so anyway, this meeting is to, you know, to not only say a year later we're representing this meeting that never happened. By the way, it was a constitutional meeting. It was a legal meeting. It was a rightful meeting. It's none of the government's business if a group of people are meeting to talk about what our rights are as citizens, as individuals, as citizens under a constitution that of the supreme law of the land that is supposed to protect your God-given rights or your rights that were given by your creator, whoever you say your creator is. I say my creator is God. You can say whoever your creator is, but your creator then, hopefully your creator is not your government, because if your government can give you your rights, they can take them away.
Exactly. Yeah, no, you're exactly right. We've seen here over the last year, couple of years. I'll just pose this as a question. I've got a number of emails asking this. In your view, this is changing gears a little bit. In your view, has Obama been the greatest of all of the land giver awayers? Has he given the most? Has Obama been the man in power out of all of the recent presidents who have given the most land away, or that's the wrong way of putting it, or federalizing most land out of the last?
I'll read straight from a quote of his. And no challenge poses a greater threat to future generations than climate change. And that's why over the past 6 years, we've done more than ever to combat climate change, from the way we produce energy to the way we use it. That's why we've set aside more public lands and waters than any administration in history. And that's why I will not let this Congress endanger the health of our children by turning back the clock on our efforts. I am determined to make sure that American leadership drives international action. That is a quote from Obama. I think it was 2014. So he said, that's why we've set aside more public lands and waters than any administration in history. And I don't think he's done yet. I mentioned earlier the Klamath River dams. It is the largest dam removal project. I'll say dam destruction project in worldwide history. Mostly based in Northern California and Southern Oregon, but I say mostly in Northern California, because three of those dams, might be all four, but three are located in Northern California. And a lot of Southern California gets its water from Northern California. These dams serve many purposes. I mentioned flood control, drought control, irrigation for farmers and ranchers, and they also provide, you know, 24/7 water for fish. There are ranchers and farmers who lived on the Klamath River ever since they were born, even before they, you know, generational families on that river system. And they would tell you that before the dams went in, during drought years, which California is a, you know, historically, it is a drought-ridden state. It's very arid. It's desert. It's dry. It's hot. You know, Sacramento gets 113-degree weather. But because we've diverted water, whether it's the Sacramento River or the American River or what diversions, canals, whatever, we've been able to move water and then take that water and use it, not only for the environment and for fish, but also for people. There's been a balance. And so anyway, with the Klamath River dams, you know, as the largest dam removal project in worldwide history, they are basing it on junk science. They are basing it, and I mentioned the Andy Johnson case. I didn't say this. This is the guy, the farmer out of Wyoming who had the stock pond. They are, you know, under a technocracy, it's a scientific dictatorship.
Yes.
And in a scientific dictatorship, we see the usage of computer modeling. This is an example of that is climate change. They say that the United Nations and our government, all different parts of our government, ever since President Clinton created the Executive Order 12852, which is the President's Council on Sustainable Development, which means that agencies within the government adopted through executive order, they had to, this concept of sustainable development. Well, under the Klamath River dams, what they are saying, and I'm going to get back to the Johnson case because I didn't finish that either. Under the Klamath River Dam Destruction Project, worldwide history, largest dam removal project in worldwide history, they are saying, based on computer modeling, that the fish, the coho salmon is their pet project on this one. That's the pet project endangered species, which you can buy in Whole Foods for $8.99 a pound, by the way, right now, wild, caught, coho salmon. So if it's endangered and threatened, how come you can buy it in Whole Foods, right?
Good question.
So, but that's what's going on. So, but what they're doing is using computer modeling and science, computer science, to create models. They're doing this with the wolves as well, saying that certain areas based on computer modeling, they're doing this with climate change based on computer modeling. This is what we're predicting. We're saying that if you introduce X amount of wolves in this area, it is going to return and balance the ecosystem. If you remove these dams, it's going to provide this much water and this much more water. They don't know. They don't know. The thing about science, it's ever changing. It's never constant. It is constantly changing. This is why it's a field of study. If it was settled, like they say, climate change is settled. Sorry, I'm getting so passionate.
No, I love it.
I don't know if it's my cold or, you know, just the subject or a combination. But anyway, if science is settled, as they say, it's a done deal, people. You might as well go home and live your happy little lives watching TV. And because under sustainable development, they will control every aspect of our lives. As they say in this document right here, Agenda 21, this is by the president. This is by Executive Order 12852, by the way, right here. The Earth Summit Strategy to Save Our Planet. This was under President Clinton. Not that it was all President Clinton's fault, because prior to President Clinton, doing Executive Order 12852 was George Herbert Walker Bush. And he soft-lawed United Nations Agenda 21 with the help of Nancy Pelosi. Just look up C-SPAN video, Nancy Pelosi, Agenda 21, H. Conrez 353. And you will find the original video from C-SPAN of Nancy Pelosi and Broomfield and some guy named Engel pushing and wanting Congress to adopt United Nations Agenda 21. So it is not a conspiracy, it's a fact. But here's what they say about Agenda 21, and it relates to all our, you know, every aspect of our lives being controlled. Effective execution of Agenda 21 will require a profound reorientation of all human society. Think about that. A profound reorientation of all human society. What does that look like? What is that? A profound reorientation of all human society. But that's not it. That's not all. Unlike anything the world has ever experienced. Okay, there's another hint. Unlike anything the world has ever experienced. A major shift in the priorities of both governments and individuals. And an unprecedented redeployment of human and financial resources. This shift, this is the sentence that gets me every time, Doug. This shift will demand that a concern for the environmental consequences of every human action. So the concern for the environmental consequences of every human action, what are they saying right now is the biggest threat to planet Earth?
Humans, right?
Carbon dioxide.
Well, okay.
Carbon dioxide is supposedly a pollutant, a gas, a harmful gas to society, to planet Earth, to the environment, to fish, to trees, to everything. They are picking on carbon dioxide, right?
Right.
And what do we breathe?
Well,
oxygen.
And what do we exhale? Carbon dioxide. Yeah, we can inhale, just don't exhale. It's opposite of what Clinton was thinking. But anyway.
You know, a friend of mine, Aaron, said one time, you know, if carbon dioxide was so bad, then why did we, when people needed CPR, breathe into people's mouths? If it was such a poisonous thing, wouldn't we be killing each other? Anyway.
That's a good point, by the way.
It is a good point. So this shift will demand that a concern for the environmental consequences of every human action be integrated into individual and collective decision-making at every level. At every level. So what's every level? Is that the shoes you wear? Is that every level? Is it the education, your health care, your car, the car that you drive, the home that you live in? It says every level right here in Clinton's book called Agenda 21. So, you know, these guys have invested for years and years and years. You know, technocrats have invested for way longer than people who pushed Agenda 21. But these people have a legacy to leave behind. You know, you think about Al Gore and his pushing Agenda 21 and climate change and global warming and anthropogenic global warming.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think he's just going to give up because we have a president now that says, you know, I'm questioning climate change. I'm questioning man-made global warming. Do you think that Al Gore and all these people who've been, that have written and crafted and created documents as thick as this are just going to walk away and give up? They're
no.
not.
And this is a big business as well, obviously. Yeah. No, they're not going to. In fact, I would submit that they're going to double down in the face of whatever opposition might be, they might experience. I do have a feeling they're going to double down on this. And
I think you're right. I think you're right. And you know, you're going to see, I guarantee you're going to see an increase in when it comes to media coverage of some of these climate change conferences that are going to continue. They're not going to go away. They're going to continue because right now they have so many people, and this election proved it. There are a lot of people who are going along with this agenda. There are a lot of people who are not, and this is where I really just invite people to start looking. You know, I get asked quite a bit, you don't believe in global warming? I haven't seen the evidence. I've heard what Al Gore has said. I've heard what Obama said. I have not seen any evidence that Sacramento's weather is any different from 40 years ago from when I was 7 years old. Hmm. I have not seen the climate change in Sacramento where I was playing as a teenager soccer in 113 degree weather. My parents have this ranch. They've had it for 30 years. That ranch has more trees on it now than it ever did. That ranch is more beautiful now than it ever was. It is greener. There is lots of water. It's, you know, it's beautiful.
You must be punished. Sorry.
So when people say, you know, there is global warming, here's where I invite people to go. Go find out for yourself. The truth is really, really liberating. It is freeing when you know, when you can speak authoritatively about what you're speaking versus saying, yeah, well, you know, I saw an inconvenient truth or whatever it was.
Inconvenient truth. Yep.
Yeah, I saw that and I saw where the glaciers are melting. No, you saw a camera angle. You saw, you know, when I was at the United Nations Sustainable Development Conference in 2012, which is, you know, I went on my own time and my own dime. I was also running for Congress at the time because I wanted to represent people and I wanted to go there for myself so that I can come back and speak authoritatively about Agenda 21 and what goes on in these conferences. I remember sitting in a press conference. It was extraordinary with a scientist from Sweden. And he was showing, it was green, he was showing a video, it was a video of Greenpeace. And it was a baby seal being led around by an Eskimo on a hook, blood in the glacier, in the snow, with a cow, a mom seal, following behind. I mean, it was sickening. And so here you see, and there, the Greenpeace's message was, we need to stop the killing of baby seals. Well, this Swedish scientist proved how it was a four-camera shoot. A four-camera shoot. You could see, they pointed out to where it was an all-day shoot, where the shading, you know, the shadows were sure. Different. So they had set up this propaganda. They killed that baby seal. They hooked it. They hooked it. It was bleeding, and you know, so people need to see that kind of thing for themselves. They need to, you know, and that's the real investigation that needs to happen. Not that, oh, I saw Inconvenient Truth, or I read, you know, go read these documents like I have. Go study. This one's called Planning for Sustainability. I know you can see it, Doug, and I know some people on Facebook can see it. This is Planning for Sustainability, Creating Livable, Equitable, and Ecological Communities. Now, those people who understand and know Agenda 21 already see Agenda 21 all over this place. But who is this book? Who wrote this book? Department of Human Ecology at University of California, Davis is where this book came from. And it is a 2014, I think, is the, okay, then it's San Jose State University, and it's also Newcastle University in UK, published in 2013. Who cares, right? Who cares? Why do you care, Debbie? Why does this matter? Because what they're pushing in colleges and universities is this thing called sustainable development, climate change, and also, okay, it's like this says, the problem, in other words, is not so much population growth as the way we use our land. So they're directing the future by, you know, saying what gets taught in schools. This is why Common Core is a big problem, because what they're teaching in Common Core is that the earth is dying based on global warming because of human beings and our consumerism, and which I'm going to go full circle now from the very beginning of the show, which is why companies like Walmart are pushing the 2030 agenda. They win. They do not lose by pushing Agenda 2030 or the 2030 agenda and nudging us into a future by what kind of consumers, grading us by what kind of consumers we will be in the future. And children are being taught this in schools. You have a, you know, carbon footprint calculator. I'm sorry, I'm going to wipe my nose if I can find something. So this is my, I used a plate mat.
It's all right. I use my sleeve sometimes. We're all, Debbie, I hate to cut you short. We're just about at the end of the program here. We got about a minute left. So yeah. Just to look at this, the big picture here. All of this is related, whether it's Common Core that's poisoning the minds of our children, but teaching this pseudoscience, this junk science, it's everything's related.
It absolutely is. You can connect the dots. When you start connecting the dots, this is what I really, you know, if there's a message that I leave with people, it's please, please, I'm begging you, do the research so that when you talk about these things, you fully can stand behind what you're saying. You can fully stand behind it. And if somebody says, you know, the world is overpopulated, you know, I love to ask people, you know, if you believe the world is overpopulated, do you have children? Most likely, yes. Do you have grandchildren? Yes. Will you have children? Yes. If you truly believe the world is overpopulated, should you be having a family?
There you go.
If you believe the world is overpopulated or we have this consumerism problem, should you be overconsuming? Should you be flying?
Right.
So if you're not going to walk the talk, then I beg you to do the research, to stand behind your, you know, the lifestyle that you're living. And wow. And there is freedom in that. There is freedom in that.
Indeed there is. Debbie, thank you so much. I know that it's rough under the weather a little bit, but thank you for toughing it out, hanging in with us. I just want to say God bless you. We're going to be promoting this broadcast. God bless you, and come back again, please. Thank
you. Happy New Year.
That'll do it for us tonight, folks.